There we go. Good morning, everyone. If I would presented a sermon today about something topical like the Sabbath or some Bible passage and all, it would have been a whole lot easier. I had this idea and I thought, okay, it'd be great. But then I've been praying, I've been thinking and thinking and praying and praying and thinking, and this is all the farther I could get on my notes. And with the exception of maybe this note here on which Bible verse to use, I could probably throw it away. What I was hoping to do is to share a testimony. And I don't know why I asked Laura to give her testimony at one other time. And she initially said yes. And then she told me no. And I'm kind of painfully aware of why that is now, because when you start divulging things about your life, you're like, yeah, I don't know. You don't need to know that. So, we're going to give it a go today. Because at the end of the day, God has been very good to us. I am so happy to be part of this church family. Each and every one of you are very precious in God's sight. And for some of you, I'm closer to you than I am some of my own flesh and blood. So, with that, let's have prayer. Heavenly Father, please give me clarity of mind to go forward with the testimony of what you have done for us, done for me. Father, I pray for the right words to say, and I pray that the words would be heard by the ones who need to see a glimpse of you somehow. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. So, it's funny how you keep coming to church day after week after week after week, and suddenly you've been here for a few years. you guys were just little french fries when we started coming to church here. Just first time we saw Violet, she kind of peeked around her mom's dress, and she you guys had just come back from out east, and we hadn't seen Violet, and she just kind of peeked around her mom's dress, and like, oh. So it's the years, they add up over time. Well, on part one of my story, I don't know, some of you have heard it, some of you haven't, where I just kind of grew up not knowing much about God or really anything about God. My wife, she started asking me, well, you know about the story about Jonah, right? And I'm like, no, what happened? She said, well, what about Daniel and the lion's den? No. She said, who raised you, wolves? Well, I mean, and I had been to church a couple times, but I'd been to church and all I could think about was sit down, stand up, sit down, stand up, children's story, go home. It's like, when is this going to be over? I want to go home. And that's, in essence, what I got out of church. And I went to church a little bit as a teenager. But these kids were advanced, and so they were down there in their Sunday school class, and they were doing Bible drills. Okay, find John 3:16. These kids go, shoo, John. They had their Bible up in here. And I'm like, where's John? And I, so it was through my wife. After we got married, she had shared things about. I'd always believed in God, but I didn't know what to believe or just. I knew that God existed, but I didn't really know quite what to do with that information. And it was through her that she led me to Christ. I'm really off. You can't put a value on that, okay? It just is. And we knelt down. There's a whole chain of events, and I'll have to do part one sometime to catch you up. But we knelt down in the living room to pray. We had devotions, and we knelt down to pray. She didn't lead me in prayer. She just knelt down, and she closed her eyes, and she was silent. I'm like, I poked her. What am I supposed to do? Because I'm that guy, you know, that has, there's no thought that goes unspoken. I'm trying to rein that in. It's getting better, but it's still not there. I poked her. What am I supposed to do? She says, well, ask God into your heart. And, you know, just ask him to be with you. I'm like, okay. So then she commences the praying again. I'm okay, okay. I'm down on our living room floor in our first house in Norova. I'm kneeling there. I said, Lord, please be in my heart and please be with her. So then I opened my eyes and she's still praying. So I'm like, what do I do? So I poked her again. Hey, she's trying to pray. I'm done already. She goes, okay. And that's how my Christian walk began. It's through studying the Bible, we started, at this point, she was not real happy about things that had happened in the past, and so we weren't going to go to church. I'm like, okay, fine, don't care, I'm not going to go to church. Well, we started to keep, you know, we started learning about the Sabbath and different things. She knew about all that already. But she started to teach me, and we said, okay, we're going to keep the Sabbath. So we spent two dreadful Sabbaths at home with no television, no radio, just kind of sitting there at lunch, sitting on the couch going, and that's not all I knew. That's all I knew. You know, I was like, okay, we could have worship again, you know. And then so after that, we're like, no, we need to go to church. So that's when we started seeking out a church. And it's been a blessing ever since. It's just been really, really awesome. I've met so many good people, so many friends. Well, okay, so after you fast forward a little bit, here you are. You're out there serving the Lord. You're busy. You're active in your church. And Satan has a way of getting into your life and making these little digs. And sometimes you don't realize the peril that you're in until you're well into the snare. Me and finances don't get along. I am the world's best spender of money. I'm just great at it. When you're walking with the Lord and you're doing what God's telling you to do, you're blessed. You guys believe that? Okay, so when those blessings become natural and normal and part of your everyday life, you become to expect those things. So what happens when you make a left turn and those blessings start to recede back a little bit? I'm a believer that God works out all things for them who love the Lord. And we were discussing earlier about how he doesn't just let us go, he pursues us. And even when we're making foolish decisions and bad decisions, just flat out bad ones, he still loves you. You're still his. And he's still willing to let you suffer a little bit, but you're never you're never in total danger. When Justin was just a little guy, we used to let him explore a little bit. You know, if he got scratched by a stick, or he always used to go out and climb the apple tree. Tell him, Justin, don't climb the apple tree. He'd always rip his pants. He always ripped his pants on the apple tree. I don't know what that boy did. So we tell him not to do it. Well, the one time we saw him climbing the apple tree, and he got stuck on there. The boy always got stuck on things. He got stuck in his bunk beds. He'd probably be a little embarrassed by this, but he's not here. It's okay. We had these wooden bunk beds, and he'd always try to slide through, and he'd get his head stuck between the mattress and the top rail of the board. And he'd be under, help me, help me, help me. And we'd always go up there and he was stuck. I mean, you had to like really push the boy back up through there. And so he was never really in a lot of danger, but he just thought his world was ending at that moment. And God does that for us. Somehow I'm the dummy who keeps sliding my head, trying to slide through the top bunk there, my thing here. I was working as a drywaller. Life was good. I was making good money. And Chris was able to stay home with the kids. And, you know, we were doing well. I thought at the time, you know, oh, we're so broke, we can't do this, we can't do that. You know, we pay our bills and then there's nothing left over when we're done. Wouldn't that be awesome? I sometimes I look at that and say, oh, my bills are paid, woohoo. So things are going along really good. And then in about 2008, the economy started to take this weird turn. The presidential elections, the economy was taking this hard turn, and the housing market crashed. When we were doing drywall back in those days, they would just come in, buy a cornfield, make a farmer a millionaire. He could make $2.50 a bushel for corn, or he could become an instant millionaire. These guys were just selling their fields, just bam, gone. Suddenly they were building 400 homes, and they were, you know, all these, suddenly the schools had to be built because the 1,000 kids were suddenly entering into these new subdivisions. And I remember driving around thinking, who is buying these houses? house after house after house. I mean, we made a lot of money. This was, I got in at the kind of at the where the peak of that housing boom, and we rode that train for 10 years, and it was great. It was awesome, but it was a little inflated, I got to tell you. I remember working on the houses and just wondering, how is this even possible? Who's buying these houses? Who's financing this? It just doesn't seem right. Naperville, Oswego, Yorkville, they all doubled and tripled in size in the matter of 2 or 3 years. Well, as that started to crash, the work started to dry up, okay? So then the bosses that I was working for, the only work, there was no more houses to get. We couldn't compete with the guys who were getting the houses. The bidding was so low on those things. There wasn't money. Because the guy that I worked for, he wanted to do things honestly. Keep his insurance up. Keep your workers' comp going. He wanted to do everything by the book. Well, he was trying to out there compete with people who weren't playing by the book. And so there was no more houses to be had. So the only work we could get was from old-time builders that we had, and they were only doing basements, additions, remodels. It was little work. And so slowly our income started to dry up. Well, my bills were the same. I had a car payment, had a house payment. And then somewhere along the line, someone in the Capital One says, hey, how about a credit card? I said, sure. That was had a $300 limit. You can't go wrong. Credit card with $300 limit, what's wrong with that, right? I think it was like 18% interest, but I didn't care. I was like, I'll just pay the bill every month. It'll be fine. Well, then a little bit later, Discover sent me a card, and the one raised their limits. And, before it was all said and done, I had $14,000 in credit card limit, which for some of you, that's like, that's it. But for some of us, that's huge. Back when I bought my house, the lending was so crazy. They told us, Christy and I, is that we could borrow $180,000. I looked at my paycheck and I said, no, we cannot borrow $180,000. So that's why we ended up with something much smaller, the house in Earlville. But the bank was willing to give us all that. They told me that you could have a mortgage up to 66% of your gross income. I don't even know how you'd make that payment. I was thinking, okay, interest rates were at 8 or 9%, maybe 10%. If you had bad credit at that time, that's like $1,800 a month. No, I can't do that. That's just not going to happen. We're not going to do that. But the job market, my bills stayed the same. Cost of everything stayed the same. And my paycheck kept getting smaller week after week after week. And it kept getting tougher and tougher. To the point where Christy ended up getting a job just to make things happen. And she's a trooper. I mean, she's really a trooper. If you read in Proverbs chapter 31, that talks about the studious wife, that's her. Think about it. She was holding these like one as many as she had. At one point, she had four jobs. And none of them paid good, not one of them. They were terrible hours, terrible pay, and she was homeschooling the kids. She's a trooper. But she is not willing that anybody or that our family would fail. In her mind, failure is not an option. And I love that about her. She's super strong. But we kept trying. When you have a basic, you work for a cleaning company or you work, clean the laundromat, they don't pay you good. They don't even pay you for the hours that you work. And you have a choice. Take the junky paycheck or go home. Go away. They'll just hire somebody else. Well, this kept happening to the point where it just wasn't viable anymore. And then the company said, well, Steve, tell you what. We have this thing here where you can go on unemployment. You can get full benefits. And the government has this thing where, where you can... some percentage of your base unemployment pay, you can actually work and still get unemployment benefits. So I'm like, okay. So what I did is I thought, cool. I don't have to work. as hard. I still had to work, but I don't have to work as hard. I can work 6 hours a week for my employer, draw a full paycheck from the government, and I'll have finally, because I was just sick to death of drywall. I don't want to do drywall no more. Done with this. Because the housing market was crashing. There was no work to be had. The people who were hiring were crazy, just out of their mind crazy, very picky, because they knew they had you over a barrel, so they could just say anything, and they didn't want to pay it, they didn't pay it. It was just terrible. It was during that time I did a side job for a friend of mine, okay? I was in there, I did every wall, every corner, every ceiling in the house. We'd put, wrapped up the openings and I did a ton of work. And I don't have it in me to charge people what they ought to be charged. You know, if you go to the mechanic and they tell you it's $400, you ever have that happen to you? Have your furnace worked on, they tell you it's going to be $1,000 to fix it. I can't do that. I don't have it in me. So I just told him, like, look, dude, whatever. I mean, I've done this with lots of people before. Just do what you can. We'll call it good. And usually it turned out all right. Well, this time I worked at every wall in every room in every corner of his house, and he gave me $200. I've been there for a week. And I thought, you know what? If that's all I'm worth, I ain't doing it no more. It's at that pinnacle moment, and you know what? I feel like, yeah, I think he did cheat me a little bit, but you know what? I just told him, just give me whatever you can. Just do this. We'll just call it good. It was a blessing. Because if that's all my skills and that's all my abilities are worth, then I don't want any part of it. It actually gave me freedom. Freedom to pursue something else. But freedom comes at a cost because I still didn't have a job. So, things have a way of snowballing on you, okay? So here you are making an unemployment check that was, it probably is $10 an hour. Because if you based it off the drywaller's wages, there was a maximum. And it's kind of goofy the way all that works. And what happens is unemployment was only meant to be 6 weeks long. Well, then the government says, no, we need to make it, we'll extend it for 3 weeks. Then we'll extend it for 6 months. Well, every time they did an extension, they gave you a different factor of what it's, how much you get. So whenever you went to the next extension, your paycheck would change again. And it always shrunk every time. But as long as, and I made bad decisions because I had told myself, okay, it'll be fine. This is what'll happen, you know. I'm going to go to McDonald's, or I'm going to go somewhere else, and they're going to pay me $9 an hour, or I can stay here on unemployment and make $10 an hour. What would you do? Would you make more money at sitting at home, or would you just go out and do horrible things at the cleaning company where they don't pay you to drive between the jobs, they don't pay you, they tell you it's going to be an hour and a half, and like with her one laundromat job, he got her paycheck whenever he got around to it. Wasn't even on time. I'm thinking, I don't want to do that. We got to a point where we weren't making our house payments anymore. Just couldn't. There's no money to be had. Then the credit cards, you stop making the credit card payments. I got to tell you, that's bad. Having been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, don't do it, okay? And if you got any ability to do it, pay it. Pay them. Along the way, what I discovered is our house, it ended up in foreclosure. This whole chain of events, and I don't know, this is all while I'm at church serving, and I say, hi, Steve, how's it going? I'm doing fine, just fine. And, you know, you put on your happy face and go to church. Think about that. When you see half the people you see out here, they're struggling with something mightily, and they're smiling. It's really something. So our house was in foreclosure, Capital One. You know they show you the guys, what's in your wallet? They show the Vikings. That's their collection crew. Don't let them fool you. They are mean. They are mean, mean people. I will never have another Capital One credit card again. They are ferocious. The interest rate went up to like 28 or 30%, and they call you every day. And they charge you interest up until they shut your card off, and then it's really bad. So while all this was happening to us, I'm trying to get in my mind all this, the timeline of all this happened, they repossessed our car. Dude, there is nothing quite like that. It's not the worst thing that ever happened to me, but you get that knock on the door at 11 o'clock at night, and there's two people out there saying, hey, we're coming to get your car. And nobody will believe me. This is the truth. I had the payment ready. I was going to make it the next day. Doesn't matter. They were there to take the car. So I said, hon, I need the keys to the car. She didn't quite understand what I was telling her, and then it sunk in, and it just... And they were nice. They're really nice people. That because they said, "Yeah, we're here to take the car, but if you don't give us a fight or anything, we'll let you take your stuff out." Because they don't have to do that. They can just hook up the record to it and go. So you have to do this loser walk out to your car and go get your stuff out, whatever you can grab, so they don't take it. Because they'll let you have it back, but they charge you for it, and they take it too far, far away. So if you get it, it's not worth going after. The stuff that just keeps rolling on you. And then, so when Capital One finds out your house is in foreclosure, they pile on. They get up on her, they say, okay, if your house is in foreclosure. So I actually went to a court hearing because Capital One wanted to join the lawsuit with Bank of America. Because they know that once one of them had a judgment against me, they were going to take the house and sell it, then the other guys wouldn't get any of the money. So Capital One actually piled on to the lawsuit. Yeah. So, you know, and what happens when you're doing this, my wife is a trooper. I love her to death, and we discussed this before. I wouldn't have shared any of this without her permission. Resentments pop up in marriage that, whether you mean to or not, when you love somebody, truly love somebody, they might have said something, they might have did something, and you just ignore it. You put it aside. Well, she thought I was just being a fool, and she started to resent that a little bit, but she didn't. She's a trooper. She held it in. Well, I'll work harder. I'll do more. I won't let this family fail. We're going to keep everything together. But while you're doing that, the resentments start to build a little bit. And we've... little things. I mean, you say something that's just stupid and out of line, you put it away. You don't say anything. You let it go. But it's always there. And if you start putting that into a pressure cooker of high stress, high debt, high other things, it puts all kinds of... It changes your problems into other things. This is all the whole time. This is while I'm going to church, smiling, preaching sermons, and going out the evangelistic crusades. We're traveling in a band. We're doing all kinds of fun things. But in the meantime, the core of our foundation is like falling apart. So about that time, the governor had this plan. It's called the Illinois Hardest Hit. And what they do is if people who are upside down in their mortgage, say you bought a house for $150,000, now it's something worth $60,000, they would finance part of your house payments and get you back and figured all that out. Well, that's fine. You had to go through classes. I went through the classes. I did this. And what they did is they turned around and said that I made too much money. I'm like, really? An unemployed person's making too much money to save their house. And the other problem that I had was that I didn't buy a house too big for what I needed. If I had bought the $150,000 house, I would have qualified it. But since I bought the $60,000 house, I didn't qualify. This is after I went to Rockford. I did all the classes. I did this, and I start. You know, this is faith building. Helps you pray, right? Troubles and trials help you pray. So, like, Lord, what are we gonna do? I don't even know what to do. So what happened is, I don't know, things were just grim. I mean, I was looking for work. I did everything by the letter of the law. The state of Illinois unemployment system said that I only had to look for three jobs a week, and I didn't have to go in or prove anything to anybody. And so in order to stay on unemployment, I would just, like, in 1 week, I applied at Boeing out in Seattle to be a paint sprayer. I knew they were never going to hire me. I called Burke's Brothers Drywall. It's a union company, and they were flat broke, didn't have, you know, they had no work, nothing for anybody. And then the guy asked me, why are you union? I said, no. He says, well, you can't work here. I'm like, okay, thank you. Okay, job number two. Sometimes you don't know where to turn, but you're not willing to change. And God knew this. He knew this. He saw this happening, and he's like, okay, we're going to fix this. But you guys need to learn a couple lessons first. Not that God wants to teach us a lesson, but he wants us to gain. He wants you to grow. Whatever your struggles and your trials are, he wants you to, he'll deliver you from it. He will. But he wants you to be a better person from it at the end. It was shortly after that we got a call from the Illinois Hardest Hit people, and it was like 2 months. Nothing. And they called us up and they said, tell you what, you don't qualify for our regular program, but we have this thing where what we'll do is we're going to give you a loan that you don't have to pay back, and it'll get you current on your mortgage. So what happened is we went to a closing where we borrowed more money, which is weird. and you make $0 of payments on it, and after 5 years or 10 years, they forgive the loan. And it got my house current on all the payments that I didn't make for the 6 or 8 months, 10 months, they made all the payments, all the charges, all the back fees, and put our house in good standing again. God delivered us. Because we were told we didn't qualify. And God made it possible. But see, that didn't fix everything that was wrong, because we still had the credit cards, we still had the car. We bought a car for $9,000, right? We drove it for 3.5 years, made payments on it faithfully every month, and after 3.5 years, we still owed $6,000 on this car. And by the time they repossess it and sell it at auction and everything else, we still owed $9,000 after paying on it for 3 years and having it repossessed. Yeah, isn't that wonderful? It's our own fault. I mean, I'm not looking for sympathy from anybody. This today, and that's where I don't like to share these kind of things, but if I can show you that God loves you, he's willing to deliver his people, and in spite of our bad decisions, he can still do wonderful things. So I would say this is all happening. I have my timelines a little fuzzy with all this. That Christmas of like 2011 was probably a really bad year for us, really bad. So I would say September, October, November is really the darkest time for Christy and I. We don't fight. We've never shouted at each other or just had a knockdown, drag-out fight. The angrier we get, the more silent we tend to get. It's okay. She's quiet a lot. But that was probably our deepest and the darkest time, because the stresses were all coming together in this magical brew that was just bad. It was bad on top of bad. And we had this breaking point between us where we finally started to talk to each other. You guys ever have a boil that festers and festers and festers? Because we can keep internalizing all these things that people say and people do, and you internalize it just festers. It came to a point where finally it just all came out. Finally we started to talk to each other. Finally we started to address all the problems, all the things that we were ignoring. Okay? And her and I we never not gotten along, ever. Okay? But the stresses were causing this boil, this festering sore that was getting between us. And then finally, God started to heal that too. Sometimes you just got to get it all out in the open. Okay? And I remember it was like November and we had no money and Christmas was coming and we gave the kids like, you know, like a $20 present or something, you know. But they didn't go without. My kids have never gone without. We never missed a meal in any of it, you can tell here. We've never missed a meal throughout all of that. So finally, about November-ish of 2011, we finally got our heads straight. We finally started working things out. We started working together again. I thank God for her. And I thank God that she's patient. And she puts up with a lot. But the devil wasn't done. Because here I am, finally we got that worked out between us, and I got it in my head, okay, I need to start doing right, I need to start making better decisions. Well, about January, the first week of January, the unemployment check came in, and it was $100. It went from like $800 to $100. So, the house payment was due, everything, all the bills were due, and we had eaten so much spaghetti at this point, I just don't want to ever look at spaghetti again. I'll eat spaghetti, but if I never got served spaghetti ever again in my life, it's probably okay. Here we are. Now, you had her cruddy paychecks from the cleaning companies, which she was, that way she could do homeschooling, and worked things out around her schedule, and it worked. And the pay was terrible, and the hours were bad, and everything else. Now my unemployment decided, this thing that I had been relying on, this $100, was turned into $100. Because just before unemployment cuts you off, it gets to a certain point, and it just drops down to nothing. It's the magical point where people start looking for a job. It's amazing how it works. So I'm in like code red. I'm like, the alarms are sounding, the sirens are flaring. I'm like, and she's looking at me like, I told you this was going to happen. This was after we had got things worked out. We got things fixed, right? And I'm disappointing her again. But there's forces at work. God knows what's happening, and he's answering your prayers before you even ask. You guys believe that? My sister-in-law, Regina, was working for a place called Home Helpers. And basically, the company was failing when she started there. But she's like, look, let me help you out. Let's see if we can get this straightened out. And she got the customer service and the scheduling thing nailed down, so it finally started to work for him. Because the guy that owned it, was the best salesman I ever met. And she got the customer service, and Regina can just nail down, you know, schedules and this and that, but she was getting overworked, and she was ready to quit. She's like, if you, and I had no idea this was kind of, she kind of mentioned it here and there that she worked for this guy and he was a jerk, and that's all I knew. And it came to a boiling point with her at the same time that my unemployment quit. You suppose that was just a happenstance? So she came to a point where she's like, look, I got to have help. If I don't have help, I'm out of here. And he's like, no, don't quit. And he's like, well, what do you have in mind? She says, my brother-in-law, he needs a job. He'd be good with the customers. He can answer the phones. He can do stuff. I need help in here. And so I went into an office situation with no training other than what we've done with this church stuff here. And God provided. And yeah, it was the $10. I got the same $10 an hour that everybody got. But you know what? At this point, I appreciated it. At this point, I was working for it. See, God takes you down this road where somehow you learn to appreciate what you have. I was taking things for granted. I was taking my wife for granted. I was taking my wife for granted. I was taking the unemployment for granted. I was taking a lot of things for granted. God is good. God is very, very good. Not only did that, he gave me this job at Home Helpers. That began to grow, and I started learning different procedures and policies and things that would help me out doing paperwork for the state of Illinois. Yay, that's fun. You should try it sometime. That was a stepping stone. Not only was God taking us out of the pit, but it was preparing me for something else down the road to this job that I'm at now. I have the greatest job in the whole wide world. pay could be better, but every day I pinch myself. I think this is great. I drive around in a pickup truck and spend money. Yeah, God is good. God is very good. Well, in the process of all this, we still had the credit cards to deal with and all that, and I was just trying, now that Capital One had lost the thing with the lawsuit with the mortgage company, they had to go after me in other ways. Well, I learned something about wage garnishments. You guys have something? Wage garnishments are interesting beasties. But the cool thing about wage garnishments is if you have 10 people that want your money, only one of them can take your money. So the rest of them have to get in line. So one of the credit card companies, I discovered one of them got me first. And you know what they figure? They take $8 an hour times 40 hours plus another $50 or something like that. And they figure you can live on that. Every dollar past that amount, they take and give it to your wage garnishment. So suddenly here we are. We're finally it's like being chased by a pack of wolves. You finally be able to catch your breath a little bit, and all of a sudden, bam, another one gets you. You're praying, and you start praying again, Lord, help. I mean, at this point, the Lord had been so good. He had helped me with the job. He helped me with the finances. He helped us with the mortgage. Every step of the way, he had delivered us. At this point, why would I doubt? Why would I worry? Why would I wonder where my help was coming from? He's been just flat out awesome. So, it was shortly after that. Finally, after about 6 months of wage garnishments, maybe longer, maybe 9 months of wage garnishments, we ended up filing for bankruptcy. And you know what? I think if Christians take on a debt, Christians should pay their debts. I do believe that. Sometimes they're just so overwhelming and you're in such a pit. If you've been there, I don't point fingers. Not even a little bit. And I'm thankful that I was given freedom from that. That is such a huge burden. We're not being chased by the wolves anymore. I answer my phone now. The paperwork was coming in so fast and furious. Just for the bankruptcy, I filled an entire briefcase just full of the paperwork and the check stubs and the, oh man, it's a staggering amount of paperwork that came along with it. This is Philippians 4. It is God who works in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure. Do all things without murmuring and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked, perverse generation among you. Shine as lights in the world. All this was happening while I was active in church, while I was praying, doing prayers, song services, this, that, and every other thing, smiling. How are you doing today, Steve? Fine. But through it all, God is a deliverer. And Brother Jim, I was teasing Jim this week that he was going to be part of the sermon. You are. Because there's certain things that happen along the way. All things work together to them that love the Lord. Prior to a lot of this, while I was on the unemployment, I was hiding out from my life. Sometimes you just check out. You just don't want to be part of things, and you just check out. I was checking out at Jim and Lily's house, hiding. I don't know if you knew that, Jim. It was. I think he suspected it because he's told me that I needed to go home and spend less, you know, spend more time at my house. Well, I told him, well, Jim, I would, but my wife's at work. I got to tell you, even that is a blessing. Because it was there that I learned some skills that are helping me now. All things work together for them that love the Lord. It was at Jim's house that I got worked up the courage to take my car apart, put it back together. It was at Jim's house that I learned to persevere through sometimes you're working on something and the part falls off and you're just like, oh no, what are we going to do? That's not the end. There's still hope. Especially if the person that there's someone there who's been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, already knows what it's like. If they can just guide your hand, that's a blessing. You, my church family, Kathy, Baher, Miss Julie, you different times, you Mr. Harlow Chapman, the things that you did to reach out and help us. You are Jesus. According to the Sabbath school lesson, that makes you the hand of Jesus. If it wasn't for Jim and Julie and Kathy and Harlow especially, we wouldn't have made it. God has his people placed where they need to be to help you along the way. Listen, you're a part of that too. I thank you for your prayers. So, when we're out and about, and we're out there meeting people and doing things, and we're busy, 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 my advice is always put God first. Always, always, always put God first. Watch out for the credit card companies. Don't buy a house bigger than you can afford. If you buy a car, make your car payments. Treasure your friends. They are put there by God. And if things don't make sense, or let's see, how do I say this? Things aren't always going to make sense the way they are. You know, our kids were going to the youth events, John, all the time. And we never paid you. We never gave you a dollar for anything. Not for the bowling, not for the camping, not for any of this stuff. And I don't know if you ever knew why that was. It's because I didn't have anything to give. And I told the kids, split up. You want to go? Fine. We're not paying for it. Well, and you were willing to, not knowing the situation, or maybe you did, I don't know, you were willing to step up and fill in anyway. We're all in this together. You're my family. And I just think it's just such a pleasure to be here. God has appointed us to be together. You are of an inestimable value, truly a treasure. And I hope that in sharing today, you can see that God is awesome. I hope that you can see that he is a deliverer, even if dummies like me who get caught up in our own weird thinkings and that it snowballs on you, God could deliver you even from that. I hope and pray. I used to pray that I would learn wisdom without suffering. I used to pray that. Sometimes suffering is the best teacher. But you will never be placed in a situation more than you can bear. That's been promised to us by our Father in heaven. I don't know. I need to shut up now. our closing hymn today. It's number 537. He leadeth me.